Hey everybody, welcome to The Truth About Dyslexia. In today's podcast, I am very lucky to have a guest whose name I can pronounce, as I seem to have had a few recently which I couldn't pronounce. Cliff Weitzman. Have I completely stuffed that up, Cliff? Is that how you pronounce
it? Cliff Weitzman, you got it.
Awesome. So Cliff is the CEO and founder of Speechify. Is it the charm with dyslexia and podcasts, right? Is just getting all of the words pronounced correctly. It's just like they seem so simple when you look at them beforehand, and then you're like, but we're gonna hear about Cliff's amazing story, his journey as an entrepreneur, and what he's created, and how he's grown up and survived the mad world with dyslexia. So, welcome to the pod, Cliff.
Thanks so much for having me. Glad to be here.
Yeah, and how you start these episodes off is telling us a bit about your story, when you found out you were dyslexic, how it's kind of impacted you, and how you've got to where you are today. You know, just dive in, mate. Just enjoy.
Yeah, sure. Happy to. So I'm originally from Israel. I moved to the States when I was 13. And I really struggled with learning how to read first, second, third, fourth grade. You know, the classic situation where when you're in preschool, you're still, you know, introduced to letters, but like, it's not something that I picked up at all. And my parents were like, oh, you know, he's supposed to learn it in first grade anyway. And then in first grade, like, I didn't really learn it. And then in second grade, I also didn't really learn it. And then in third grade, I was still kind of struggling with it. I eventually got diagnosed when I was 9 years old in third grade. And to me, that was like the best day of my life because I finally, you know, had a place to hang my hat and say, you know, I'm not slow. I'm definitely not lazy. I just learned differently. And so for me, you know, dyslexia is typically characterized not as a reading disability as much as a decoding challenge. And it's more than a sentence takes me as much energy and brain power as most people take to do a long division equation in their head. And so it's the time of reading is very time consuming. But the cognitive energy is really, really heavy. So if I read a sentence, it's like doing, you know, 2,343 divided by 17. And the next one is like 3,040 divided by, you know, 60. And then you do that over and over. If you read the paragraph, you're already very tired, but you're not even going to finish a chapter. You're going to be asleep before the end of the chapter. And so it's the cognitive energy and the time that were always challenging. Spelling also was always challenging, but by the time I was, you know, 18, I had an iPhone and I needed to text friends and I didn't want to be embarrassed by the fact that I messed up 2, 2, and 2. So I'd always Google to make sure I got it correctly. And interestingly enough, texting and an iPhone were the best things to help me improve my spelling. And with Speechify, I catch most spelling mistakes just by hearing them. But that's the thing that I struggled with the most. And I went through high school, by and large, buoyed by having the opportunity to listen with audiobooks. And then in university, I started listening to basically everything.
Yeah. And there must have been like, I guess you've kind of, because how old are you, Cliff? Can I ask you?
I'm 29.
At 29, so you've grown up your whole life just coming into the iPhone generation, which is just like, you know, the Grammarly generation where Grammarly, you know, we all had to deal with a word spell check, which was absolutely terrible. It didn't do anything for anybody. And so like all of these tech pieces that are coming out now must have made a massive impact in your new university.
It's huge. Yeah. I mean, I remember when I was in high school, I had academic workshop and a teacher's assistant, Mark Reisler, who was amazing. And I would click on the red squiggle inside of Word and he'd go, that one. And then I'd click on the next red squiggle and he'd click that one because I didn't know which one of the four options was actually the correct spelling. Mm-hmm. And I also was very lucky that Audible became accessible around the time halfway through my experience in elementary school. And so at the beginning of elementary school, my dad would literally record himself into a cassette tape, and that's what I would listen to as audiobooks. But by the time that I was in middle school, Audible was accessible. But mind you, Audible got acquired by Amazon in 2003. And so it became more widely accessible, you know, a little bit after that. But what I would do is I would find MP3 files of audiobooks, and then I'd put them on an iPod Shuffle. This is back in like 2006. iPhones came out 2007, which is when I was finishing middle school, and I did not have an iPhone until 2012, end of high school for me. And so really having an iPhone was a game changer. Later, it became an even bigger game changer because you could take pictures all the physical documents that was something like Speechify use optical character recognition from your pocket on any physical document that have it read out to you at, you know, 800 words per minute. And so I can't imagine who I would be if I was born 10, 15 years earlier, where Audible was not accessible, iPhone was not accessible, Speechify was not accessible, Grammarly was not accessible. I would have had a very different experience.
Here's a question with Audible, because I'm the same as yourself. I love it. I listen time and time again. I kind of flick back between podcast mode and Audible mode. So some days I just feel like a bit more flexible podcasting. Other days it's I'll go deep into an audiobook. One of the things I hear a lot with Dyslexics, and I find this a challenge as well, is I'll listen to a whole book and I'll remember four or five really good things. And then I will let the other 98% of the book just disappear out the other ear. Like, do you find that, or do you have a system you use to retain?
Yeah, I remember almost everything. Sometimes like word for word recall. Like I'm the type of person where if I listen to a song three times, I have every single word memorized. The same thing is true for like famous speeches. Like I have, you know, all of the first chapter of Harry Potter memorized, all of even, you know, books going back, Yertle the Turtle memorized. So my auditory memory is pretty strong. I did a lot of speech and debate in high school, and I was very good, particularly at impromptu speaking. And a lot of it is the fact that I also practiced listening fast. So in the beginning, I would listen at like 0.75 and then 1x. And then, you know, I listened to another 100 books, and then I moved to 2x. And then I listened to another 150 books, and then I moved to 3x. And so I'm able to walk around, chew gum, ride my bicycle, and listen at the same time while retaining a lot. If I try to listen slower at like 1x speed or 1.5, I will retain less because it will take me energy to not get distracted. But if I listen fast, I'm fully engaged and I will remember everything because there's no issue with being distracted. I'm fully engaged. In the same way that nobody expects you to be an exceptional reader in second or third or fourth grade, we expect it to take you 10 years to become a good reader. Listening is the same. You got to practice. No one who I've ever met became good at listening in the first audiobook they consume. It's typically the 10th audiobook, the 11th audiobook, where someone has mastered the ability to listen fast, do other things, and retain and comprehend altogether. Audiobooks are also more challenging than podcasts. Podcasts, the density of words per minute is a lot fluffier, just by virtue of the fact that in a book, an author has spent more than an hour crafting every single sentence. They include cited material, stuff like that. But the podcast is just you and me opining on our opinions. And so podcasts are a good warm up. And once you get good, then doing it with audiobooks and doing it faster makes a really big difference. And then if that's challenging, then listening and seeing the words appear in front of you at the same time ends up having a really massive impact.
Yeah, that's a great point, though. Like I must say, I've done the 1.5 times, but I've never gone to 3. I have to challenge myself.
If
you're like me, it's good to have two tracks, right? If you're going for a run, a walk, a bike while you're listening, because it's if you're listening only, it's so hard to stay attached to what you're doing, right? You're trying to do a million things at once. Everything's go, go, go. And so that's a great point. And how did you, was there any tips you've got to how you built up to that? Is it just something you just said, I'm going to listen?
It's progressive overload, like weightlifting would be. So I always try to listen at the maximum speed I can listen while still fully comprehending, and listening and looking at the book at the same time, or listening and looking at the words highlighted on the screen for you at the same time is key. So if you go on Speechify, for example, the Chrome extension has an automatic speed ramping feature, same thing for the web app. So it will increase your speed by like 1% every like 500 words. Until it notices that you start playing more with the speed, and then it'll ramp down to increasing the speed by 1% every like 5,000 words. But typically we have folks who will join Speechify, and off the bat, they're listening at 240 words per minute. The average American reads at 200 words per minute. A week in, they're listening at 350. A couple of months in, they're listening at 550. And like a year in, they're typically listening at like anywhere from 700 to 900 words per minute, depending on their aptitude and how dense the material they're consuming is.
That's awesome. And so just before we dive into Speechify, because I want to talk a lot about that, because I think it's a great app. I think it's, from an entrepreneur's point of view, amazing story and journey. But just before we dive into that, as you were growing up with dyslexia, you know, I've read a little bit about, you know, how tight you are with your family.
Like, yeah.
Are you the, I'm guessing you're not the only one with dyslexia. There's a couple.
I'm the older one, only one. So we're five kids. So I have dyslexia. Tyler's blind in his left eye and astigmatic in his right eye. Eric has like very strong ADHD. Geffen has auditory processing disorder. Alex doesn't have any learning differences, but she has, you know, other challenges. You know, everyone has their own. But everybody in my family is very intellectually inclined. And so it's a bunch of people who would be classified as like twice exceptional. So both, you know, loves learning, super curious, really fast in terms of like how quick their brain moves. But they have a visual issue, or they have dyslexia, or they have ADHD. I'm sure my grandmother has dyslexia. I have one cousin who has dyslexia. But I was the only person in my nuclear family who had it. And, you know, we're Jewish, and so we really value education. And when I was a kid, you know, my dad was the person in the world I admired most. And all I wanted to be was like my dad, and I wanted him to be proud of me. And when you're, you know, 7, 8, 9 years old, and you're bad at the one thing you're supposed to be good at, it's difficult emotionally. For me, I just got a lot of unconditional love from my parents. You know, we're a very physical family. You know, we cuddle, we kiss, we hug. And so I got a lot of that physical affection. I was told, you know, I was smart. I was told I was loved, even though I didn't perform exceptionally well academically. And so there's like this bar beneath which I can't fall. And I think at the end of the day, the thing that every person wants most is to be loved. And so if you have a kid with dyslexia, yes, obviously work with them, encourage them, teach them, but like never tell them that they're lazy or that they're stupid or that they're not trying, just because their brain works differently. Even if they don't have dyslexia, every kid wants to be loved by their parents. Every kid wants to be receive affection, to make their parents proud, without exception. And so if your child is struggling with that, trust me, it's not because they're a bad kid. Definitely if they're underneath the age of 10. It's because something in the system is not allowing them to flourish. And so it's your job to troubleshoot that and debug it and figure out what it needs to be. And if you do not know what it is, the solution is to give more love, not less.
Yeah, that's well said. And then I think we hear this a lot, and it's, you know, so many people are not diagnosed with dyslexia at an early age, right? There's like the amount of people joining my group that are 50 or 60, 70 wow. being diagnosed would blow your mind. Just because it's actually starting to be seen more. There's more AI dyslexia kind of tools to actually help diagnose. I can see that going really big in the future because, you know, I think when they actually start to diagnose dyslexia properly, there's going to be a much higher number than we ever imagined that would actually class as having some level of dyslexia. There's a spectrum everywhere. But it's, as you said, you know, for anyone listening, you know, that love is what gets you through when it feels like, you know, because we've all gone through those times where you just want to cuddle up in bed, hide under the covers, and just do absolutely nothing for a week. And just like, and the love of our families get us through that, right? Yeah.
100%.
And you know, with your family, are they, you know, sounds like with like it's quite neurodiverse in general, well, the great term of the 2020s. You know, and so are you finding, do you find yourself, have you ever been diagnosed with ADHD or any crossover stuff like that?
I'm sure I have ADHD. There's like, this is before, you know, we have shifted now to only ADHD. I was diagnosed with ADD back in the day. Heavily diagnosed with dyslexia. My ADD is interesting because, I mean, we noticed even during this interview, I'm always fidgeting. You know, my leg is bouncing, my shoulder is bouncing. You know, I'm distracted by the dog barking outside. That being said, my executive functioning, though it's easily distracted, is very, 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 very strong. And the reason is that I have a very clear view of who I want to be when I grow up. And I say that even today, I was 29. The difference between who I am and who I want to be is quite large. And I feel that very strongly. And so I know what I need to do in order to, you know, close that distance. When I was a kid, it was to learn how to read. Later was to learn how to code. Then it became, you know, learning English fluently. I only learned English when I was 13. You know, all these different things. And if there's Instagram or TikTok on my phone, I'll watch them all day. And so I use the child safety lock on my phone. I'd have no more than 2 minutes per day. And then it locks like a 5-year-old. And I don't know the password, but My girlfriend knows the password. My siblings know the password. My friends know my password. My computer shuts down at 1 a.m. Like Chrome literally does not open. I need to have someone else open it for me. I eat the same thing for breakfast and dinner because I just don't want to be bogged down by the decision fatigue. Like I just can't not work out during a day because if I don't, I will not be productive. So I have to lift heavy. I have to eat high protein dense foods. I really struggle with going to sleep on time. And so I just have all the, I like don't drink, I don't smoke. Like I have all these very rigid habits and systems that keep me thriving. And so I just don't trust motivation or the ability to focus to get me to where I want. I trust systems that I set up beforehand.
Man, I love that. And I think everyone listening, you're not a, here's the key with this. You don't think you're stupid because you got to set these up, because I'm exactly the same. If I don't have a set bedtime, I will be up all night. If I don't have limits on what I do, I will just continue to hyper-focus on easy, because it's how we're built, how our brains are operate. You know, I wear black t-shirts. That's what I buy. I buy 10 at a time. That's my style. It's because I don't want to think about what I'm going to wear every morning, you know, and like for anyone listening, you know, I and this is like, I kind of call it creative constraints. I have enough constraints around the edges to allow my creativity to thrive. But without those constraints, I just run off into the fields. And I think the other piece that I heard that I talk a lot about is around you having a really clear visual concept of where you're going. Like you're really clear. You're not leaving it up to chance. You're not going, oh, you know, depending where I go today, that's going to happen. You're clear about what, you know, who you are, what you feel. And like, do you feel that? And do you do a lot of emotional work about feeling that inside about who you're becoming? Or is it just more of a picture in your head? How does that play out?
I think I understand the question, but rephrase it for me.
Let me rephrase it. So for example, when I'm thinking about a goal in my life and what I want to achieve, if I don't really care about it, I will never do it in my life. It's on a bit of paper, never gets done. But if I decide I want to be the type of person that, you know, gets millions of podcast views,
understood.
I create the visual picture and the emotional energy behind it. Like, I'm just thinking, what's your process?
Yeah, so I do a lot of work around goal setting, like more than almost anyone I know. I don't think of it as much as emotional work, but it can be classified as an emotional work. So I'll tell you how I do it. I have a group with two of my best friends called Elephants, and we meet every quarter. But I have a Google Sheet that is tracked for 1 month, 3 month, 6 month, 1 year, 3 year, 5 year, 10 year goals across 7 categories. Love, business, goals I have for friends of mine, adventure, music, philanthropy, etc. Physical fitness, and I have like 3 goals in every category for every time frame, and then I go every month and I update them. Typically, I write in a notebook or on this sheet whenever I'm on a plane. I do a lot of journaling. When I was graduating college, I wrote a 30-page paper about my worldviews and distilled it down to the 28 principles I believe that most other people don't believe. That was super helpful in figuring out what I wanted to work on. I'm about to turn 30, and so my goal is to write more than 100 pages by the time I turn 30 about my worldviews and what I want in the future for myself. I spent a lot of time with ChatGPT thinking about, you know, who are people who by the age of 35 achieved like XYZ goals that I want to achieve, and how can I develop into the person who achieves those types of things. I surround myself with other people who have similar style goals. And sometimes I think that other people have dreams that are big dreams that we don't think to dream, but we're inspired by those dreams. We want to do it too. So my brother is very similar to me. I probably have a call with him at least once a day about aligning on goals and figuring out what direction we want to move our lives or the lives of the company. And then sometimes you need to recognize limiting beliefs that you hold or beliefs that serve you that you hold. So one really good book is Awaken the Giant Within by Tony Robbins. Super helpful for this kind of thing. So yeah, I do a lot of goal setting.
That's awesome. Yeah, I'm the same. I've got a group of 4 of us. Every quarter we catch up, we set our goals, because, you know, what I've seen a lot in the dyslexic entrepreneur space is we can get very insular if we don't force ourselves to talk about where we're going. Like we can sit in our heads, overthink things, run down paths that don't actually exist, because we get really excited and confused and lost. And in the future and in the present, there's always this barrier of trying to find that gap. When you're doing it, when you're forcing that out with friends or people you trust, and you can speak, right? They're actually giving you proper real-time feedback, not just the stuff that's built up in our brains, right?
Totally.
Yeah, no, as I said, it's brilliant. So let's dive into Speechify. Like, that was fantastically interesting. How did that come about? So where did the story start when you decided, hey, I'm going to be a tech founder and I'm going to put everything into this thing?
So I built a bunch of different products when I was in high school and then more in college, everything from 3D printed skateboard rigs to iPhone apps to websites, to payment systems. My major was renewable energy engineering. So it's a mix of physics engineering, computer science, and especially photovoltaics and nuclear engineering. But I realized at a certain point that whatever would be the thing I would focus on was most likely going to be software, because it takes so much more time to build physical products than digital ones. I had built an early version of Speechify when I was 18 before college, and it completely changed my life. I listened to about 100 audiobooks a week, and I did that for the last 17 years. I listen very fast, and I can listen when I'm biking, when I'm working out, when I'm cooking, when I'm eating. I listen to everything on my computer with Speechify. That's anywhere from 500 to 900 words per minute. 70% of the usage of Speechify is with the phone opener, computer opener in front of users. The fact that Speechify reads it into your ears and you get to see it at the same time is super important. So if you activate two senses, you basically end up doubling your retention and comprehension, and you can listen faster, and it is less cognitively, there's less cognitive load, so it's far less boring. It first got really popular around where I was going to university, and that's Stanford, Harvard, MIT, and other Ivy League schools. And then it got really popular at schools for kids with learning differences, folks with dyslexia, ADHD, low vision, autism, concussion, anxiety, second language learners. And then wrote that paper about my worldviews. And the conclusion was, I'm the person that I am because of my experience overcoming dyslexia and the fact that I've listened to 100 audiobooks a year every year for the last, at the time, it was like 10 years. I viewed my goal is to make sure, you know, dyslexia is solved, because text to speech has been around since 1962, predates the internet, but no one had built a good enough solution. So I was like, well, if I don't build it, like, no one's going to build it if I don't build it. So I just got to build it. And so I started making the tool that I had made more accessible to other people. I built the iPhone app, the Android app, the Mac app, the Chrome extension, spent a lot of time getting really good at computer science to do that, and then hired the rest of the team. And then I read a bunch of academic papers about generative AI back in 2015. And I realized that text-to-speech would be 10x to 100x better within the coming 5 years. And that's what ended up happening. And so we built, you know, large clusters of GPUs, got really good at training. My brother Tyler went back to university to Stanford, where he did his undergrad in math, did his master's in AI. He wrote three very seminal papers, and we hired 30 AI engineers for the team. And so now we are the largest supplier of speech AI in the world at this point by far. And also the number one computer vision experience on the App Store for scanning physical documents, parsing PDFs, and parsing websites so you can listen to them. And then we have the, our Chrome extension is the by far our strongest integration with Gmail, Google Docs, ChatGPT, and most news providers for clicking play and having those things spoken out to you. So now we're at about 25 million users. There's 260,000 five-star reviews of the applications on the App Store. And the goal is to make sure the reading is never a barrier to learning for anyone, no matter what your background is. And, you know, my view in life is above everything else. I want to be the person that I needed most when I was young. And when I was young, the thing I really needed was someone to read my books to me. And I was lucky that, you know, in first through fifth grade, I had my dad and my mom do it for me. And then after that, I had Audible. And after the age of 18, I had, you know, this janky version of Speechify that I built. And so my goal was to make that accessible to everybody else, especially folks like me who had dyslexia and ADHD. And we're not slow. We're not lazy. They just learn slightly differently. And so that's kind of like the vision behind the product.
No, that's so awesome. And I think, like, you know, I and that brings me back to being in high school. I was very lucky as well. I had what was called a reader-writer. So,
wow.
For an English exam back before all this fantastic technology existed. This was 2002. Literally had the English teacher sit with me, read my exam, and then write what I said. Wow. And it was the first time I'd ever got an A. And literally the teacher sat with me and said, "You're so smart, I can't even keep up with how fast your brain is operating." And that was the moment I had where it changed the game for me. And what you've done is you've turned that into technology. And for anyone out there, like, it's epic, man. Like, it's, do you just get a buzz every time you get a review or someone say this changed my life?
I did, maybe for the first 3 years, but I get like 15,000 messages a month across Facebook, Instagram, YouTube, email, the App Store. So maybe 3 years in, I started to get numb to it, to be honest with you. That being said, sometimes I get a message from someone who goes into deep detail as to how they use the product. And if you go to the App Store, of the 260,000 reviews, 15% of people who say they cried when I started to use it because it was so impactful in their lives. And so, especially when I meet young people who are really smart and really ambitious, and the distance between who they are and who they want to be is so large, and the only thing standing in their way is reading, that is, to me, extremely meaningful. A big focus for me now is we've now closed contracts with all the top publishers to resell their audiobooks and ebooks in the United States. So I have a big, big passion for obviously audiobooks, but also making them, making all books accessible, not just the 450,000 that have been recorded into audiobooks. But when I wrote that big paper, I ended up sending a very long email to the founder of Audible saying, "Hey, you don't know me, I don't know you, but I just graduated college and it's because of you. And you've been so meaningful in my life for this technology. And it's sensational to me that indeed I get these emails now as well." And so that's a very, very special experience that I get to have. And the thing that I now focus on a lot is about 17% of the population have dyslexia. 5% of public school kids are diagnosed. And then most are not diagnosed. And it's the case that SpeechIFY helps everybody, not just people with dyslexia. Everybody needs to read. And so a lot of my work is to communicate to the broader population at large the usefulness of being able to listen. And so that's where a lot of my time goes.
Yeah, man, that's awesome. And you're quite right. The numbness is true, right? And I think for many right brain people like ourselves, you know, once you've heard it a couple of times, you're kind of like, right, that's awesome. I'm over that. Next, what's next? What's the next hit I need? And it's not because you're a bad person or we're bad people. It's just once our brains, I think, actually get very, you know, we get very clear on what the outcome is in our heads. And then it's like, you don't need to tell us again. We already know how good this is. We just want to keep doing it and helping more people. Do you know what I mean? Does that make sense?
I love that.
Yeah.
Definitely.
And so AI, you guys were playing with generative AI 8 years ago, 7, 8 years ago. Where's next for SpeechIFY with what you're building? Because if you're with dyslexia, you've definitely got a lab sitting in there somewhere building interesting stuff that you would love to release, but maybe isn't quite there yet. What's next on your big pathway?
Let me see what I can and cannot share.
Yeah.
The most relevant one is the audiobooks project. So it's making audiobooks accessible. Right now, there's like 25 million people using the product. The goal is to get it to 2.5 billion using it on a regular basis. A lot is in terms of the quality of the voices. So there's about 100 and something voices on the app. It works in 80 languages. And we have people like Mr. Beast, Gwyneth Paltrow, Snoop Dogg's voice. But I'll give you as an example. So my voice is on the app. I'm the third most popular voice on the app. And if you listen to it, like, it's clearly me. I would say there's like, you know, 95% accuracy, but there's 5% that is not accurate. So there's moments where you can tell it's not me. And so we call that the uncanny valley. And my goal is to cross the uncanny valley so that you can listen with my voice and you can't tell the difference. And you can sit there and it's 15 seconds, record your own voice and you can't tell the difference. And that's where you cross a big, big chasm. I think that once you do that, I love when I yawn. It's what I'm talking, not what you're talking. So it's clear that you're not bothering me. I just happen.
Nah, it's all good. Our brains are always running at full speed. Get a rest.
And so that's the thing that I'm very obsessed on now. So it's a lot of AI research, really.
That's going to be amazing when we can just record our voices and, you know, it just literally, you can literally basically be reading every audiobook to yourself.
Exactly.
That is exciting. You know, I've had a good play around with 11 Labs and some of the work they've been doing. And it's just amazing how far it is coming. And I think, you know, what I always say to the dyslexic population is, you know, I think YouTube and that all made a massive impact in iPhones. But AI is going to just completely change the game for how our brains work, because we can see beyond what's coming and being able to use tools like ChatGPT to fill in the gaps that we just struggled with. Like it's amazing. Like being able just to like pop a transcription like this podcast into ChatGPT and it whip up the best show notes I've ever seen, you know, like that didn't exist to the general public 2 years ago. And I think if you're listening to this, and you're not using Speechify, get onto it. I'm sure it's, you know, I'm sure you'll love it. But also be testing out AI, because like this is going to be the future. Like, you know, what are you seeing with AI in general? Do you just see it's going to be a complete shift? Is that your kind of feel?
I don't think about it in the same way. Right, what is AI? You're just talking about like deep learning and machine learning, and it's just statistics, right? So it's take your normal calculator that's on your phone and just bumping up by, you know, a couple of trillion flops per second, right? Addition, subtraction, multiplication, division. And then allow it to hold more information than the human brain can hold, that obviously you can't lose, and make it really, really good at pattern matching. And so I think that the short answer is we don't actually know. I think that you will see a lot of unbelievable breakthroughs in science and biology that comes as a result. I think that the ability to listen to anything is incredible. Text to video, et cetera, is incredible. And I think it's yet to see what level of impact we will experience. I think that there is a world where the impact is larger than what you've seen as a result of the internet. But there's a world where, you know, it's not as large. We just don't know. The way I think about it is, the big insight of OpenAI was large-scale training. And so I think that for companies like Speechify that are able to use large-scale training and can benefit from the fact that we have, you know, GPUs like H100 GPUs, that's a really big deal. And then, you know, we'll see what the impact will be.
Yeah, it kind of takes that level of perfection, right? It's like what you said, it's that last 5%.
Exactly.
It hasn't been holding everything back, but once you jump past that void, you've now won something. You've got to 100, right? That's massive. Like that's huge. Yeah. So just for the last couple of quick questions, I'm talking to a lot of entrepreneurs at the moment. A lot of dyslexics are either being made redundant or they're thinking about what do they want to do next. And if you were going to speak to a dyslexic entrepreneur and you were going to give them two or three pieces of advice, what would those be? What would something around that be?
So let's separate them. One, people who are dyslexic, two, entrepreneurs. For people who are dyslexic, learn how to touch type really fast and learn how to listen really fast. The smartest people that I know, bar none, are people who listen or read. All my friends, all of them, listen now to like at least an audiobook a week. It's because you can do it when you're brushing your teeth, when you're walking to work, when you're eating breakfast, when you're in the car. Like there's no excuse not to. And if you do 10 to 15 audiobooks, you will absolutely fall in love with them, especially, by the way, fantasy audiobooks and sci-fi audiobooks. It's like better than movies. And you have to listen fast. Don't listen to 1.5. Listen to 2x, listen to 2.5. Those are the most valuable thing for people who are dyslexic. For people who are entrepreneurs, I mean, it's the highest, probably the highest opportunity time we've had so far in terms of the access the internet offers anybody. And so the number one thing I would say is to learn, right? Learn how to use generative AI to make images, to, you know, use Speechify voiceover studios to make voiceovers. Learn how to write with ChatGPT as a co-pilot. Learn how to code with ChatGPT as a co-pilot. And spend a lot of time writing your view of the world, right? What's your 30-page paper, your 100-page paper? Are the things that you believe that most other people don't believe? And then follow up, to those things. And, you know, you're doing the right thing with, you know, having the podcast and talking about it publicly, because you are building a community of other people who believe and have similar values to what you do. And finding your people, I think, is at the end of the day the most important thing. Just going back the one thing all of us want to be is to be loved. And so if you can share love publicly, that's a huge deal. Love is the only thing in life. The more you give of it, the more you have to give. It's like fire. You could light an additional candle without extinguishing the original flame. It's not impacted by the laws of thermodynamics. Like, it can be created without being destroyed. And so I think that both in terms of being dyslexic and in terms of being an entrepreneur at the end of the day is the most important thing.
Love that. I absolutely love that. And I think that is the key for everyone out there. And again, I want to come back to what Cliff said earlier, is making sure you're clear on where you're going. You know, you don't have to know how you're going to get there. You don't have to know. Listen to audiobooks. There's people have been there, they've done it. But until you're clear about where you're going, the biggest issue I see with dyslexic entrepreneurs is they play the shotgun approach for way too long. And, you know, I was watching your video, 28 Things by 28, if I'm right by the name. It's a really good one for anyone to watch. But one of the points there that was great in that it's momentum. When you've been doing something for 5, 6, 7, 8 years in a row, there is you're no longer desperate. You're there. You know, things are happening for you. They're working towards where you want to go rather than swapping every year. And I think with dyslexia, it can be very easy the minute you get close to 80%, jumping out of the plane and starting something new. And so, like, you know, those little things that push you and drive you to keep going, if you can hook into that, it's just gold, right? Absolute gold.
And, amazing.
No, thank you so much for your time, Cliff. Is there any final words you want to give to the awesome audience that are listening to this?
I think we got to do it just now. Lastly, if you want to check out Speechify on the Apple App Store, Android App Store, or even better yet, download the Chrome extension. If you do have dyslexia genuinely, download the Mac app. So search Speechify desktop app. It's a little bit more challenging to find. You have to scroll all the way down to the bottom, but it's the most powerful tool. It's harder to use, which is why we don't typically advertise it, but like, it's a complete game changer. It'll scan your screen. You can change the speed with keyboard shortcuts. Like, it's unbelievable. If you want to learn more about kind of my philosophies about life, Cliff Weissman, CLIFFWEITZMAN. And most of my stuff is either on Instagram, YouTube, or Medium.
Fantastic. And we'll make sure we add lots of links down the bottom of this podcast so you can click it, because none of us are going to remember that, right? We're all going to be clicking those links. I'll try and find the Mac link as well. I'll do my best.
Oh, awesome.
Thank you so much for your time, Cliff. Really appreciate it.
Yeah, Stephen. Thanks for having me.